Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. Probably better than you were this time last week when we were all suffering from the unpalatable fare served to us in the Champions League against Monaco, a game which reminded me of the time not long after I moved to Spain, where we went out for dinner and I think I had some prawns that weren't particularly good, and I think I also, on top of that, ate a yogurt which wasn't particularly good either. That, my friends, is a lethal combination. But I can advise anybody who is trying to lose weight that if you can stomach that, that's the right phrase, it's a guaranteed surefire way to lose about a stone and a half in 3 days. May not be the most pleasant way of losing weight, but it's quick. None of that exercise or anything like that involved. But anyway, that was last week. This week, we're coming into the podcast on the back of two wins. One against Everton, obviously, and then we won against Queen's Park Rangers during the week. And this season, we've beaten Queen's Park Rangers twice. We've beaten them 2-1 twice, and both times, it's been much more difficult than it should have been, based on the relative quality of the two sides. And I guess that's part of football. But in the first game, obviously, we had that red card for Olivier Giroud. But the game against Queen's Park Rangers the other night, you know, 2-0 up, cruising, and then we let in a goal, which makes the end of the game a little bit more difficult than it should have been. And why we can't do things just the easy way for once, or even twice. Maybe if they could do the easy thing 4 or 5 times in a row, we might get into the habit of doing that rather than this habit we have of doing the difficult thing more often than not. But look, we saw the game out. Queen's Park Rangers, I think, were a bit lucky to stay with 10 men on the pitch. Carl Henry should have been sent off for a very, very obvious foul on Mesut Ozil. Like, blindingly obvious. You know, when a guy's running through on goal and he's about to tap the ball in, all of a sudden, he lurches backwards and up into the air. What could have happened to him? What could it be? Could it be the man standing behind him with a great big handful of his bright yellow shirt, perhaps? I mean, do you need a qualification in refereeing to figure that one out? Neither the referee or his lines person saw that? And you're just kind of there looking at it going, for fuck's sake, referee. Fucking hell.
Incidentally, we apologise for any language that may have offended that you might have heard in the background.
What I do like, though, of course, is the fact that we won the game, which means that you can complain about the referee with absolute impunity. Because if you don't win the game and you say anything about the referee, even if you say, now I'm not saying we lost because of the referee, people say, oh, stop complaining about the referees, for goodness sake, it's all to do with how terrible we are and how terrible everything is and we're bad at football and we can't play football and we're not good at football and nobody is anything to do with football that's in any way good. But when you win, you can absolutely have a bitch about the officiating, and it's not just Arsenal, let's face it. Even though it has been rather negatively affecting us, for example, Anthony Taylor in the game against Newcastle didn't give Newcastle a clear penalty. I mean, it was even more obvious than the penalty that Ozil should have had. And of course, Manchester United then score a late winner, which keeps them right in the mix, rather than dropping 2 points or even 3 points had they gone behind. Across the board, the officiating has been ridiculous this season. And I do wonder and worry a little bit that it might catch up with us sooner or later. Of course, there's a big FA Cup game on Monday. Would it surprise any of you if we were on the wrong end of a refereeing decision? that ultimately prove costly? Now, of course, it could be down to the way we play or many other things, but, you know, can't help but worry about these referees. But look, it was a very good 3 points because, obviously, Man United won, Liverpool won, Tottenham won, Man City won, Chelsea won, and I think Southampton won as well. Well, they won the other night, I don't know. So it's all very tight there in that group near the top of the table. I know we touched on the Everton game in the Arscast Extra on Monday with James, but the co-commentary thing that went on, obviously, if you've been reading the blog during the week, you will have seen the video that was on the Men in Blazers TV show. They do a podcast. They also do a TV show for NBC Sports. But they showed a compilation of some of the best bits, of course, without the swearing in it, which, has to be said, were the very best bits, the ones with the swearing in it, like this one.
That wouldn't be your sole ambition, would it?
People like Alexis Sanchez.
which led to this.
Apologies once again if you've heard any inappropriate language from behind us here at the Emirates Stadium, which may be offensive.
And for once, the "if you found it offensive" thing actually works. You know when somebody in the public eye says something that they really shouldn't, whether it's sexist or racist, misogynistic, something like that, and what you always get is the old, if anybody found that offensive, I'd like to apologize, rather than "I'm sorry for what I said," but instead it's "if you found it offensive, then I apologize to you." Not sorry for saying it. I'm just saying that if you were offended by it, then I'm sorry. But in this case, it actually works in the context of a football game, I think. Because lots of people who are listening to that clearly wouldn't have been offended. The idea of somebody swearing at a sporting event is, well, I mean, it's par for the course. I remember being taken to Lansdowne Road by my father years and years ago, and Ireland were playing Spain. And I can't remember exactly what the score was or who won. I think Spain won. I don't really remember. I think Ashley Grimes might have scored for Ireland that day, which will tell you how long ago it was. But we were sitting around a group of chaps whose language was, well, to me as a young boy, not only was it educational, I believe it was inspirational. It was so wonderfully flowery. It wasn't just your typical fuck this, fuck that, you're this, you're that. It was creative, proper creative swearing. I think at one point my father was sitting there with his two hands over my ears so I might not hear it, but it was too late. The damage was done and has been done. And I'd like to thank those guys. They're probably dead now or well into their 60s and 70s. But they had a marked effect on this young man. I didn't realize you could put words together in those kind of combinations. So I'm hopeful that across the United States now, there are similarly influenced young men and women who are going to swear. And swear well for the rest of their lives. It's like when I was an English teacher working in Barcelona. I don't know where any of those kids are now. But I know, deep, deep down in my heart, I know this to be absolutely true, that there are young men who were teenagers back then who I taught through the medium of pro-evolution soccer. It's true. I'd bring in a PlayStation 2 and we would play, not every class, but every once in a while, we'd play pro-evolution soccer. And I'd teach them the language of football and stuff. So they can swear and they can say, "you fucking cunt," in an Irish accent, which must be hilarious. I hope they go around Barcelona doing that all the time. Makes me proud to think I've had such an effect. So there you go. Anyway, the job offers from broadcasting corporations have not come rolling in just yet, sadly. I'm still waiting. Phone's going to ring any moment, I'm sure. I can begin my new career as the most swearingest co-commentator of them all. Would probably work best in the live arena, live events rather than on television due to, you know, rules and people who have standards and watersheds and all that kind of stuff. But hey, I'm sure it'll happen. Anyway, we do have a big game on Monday in the FA Cup against Manchester United. a team who have gone through or are going through a transitional period. Alex Ferguson left, they brought in David Moyes, and now they've got Louis van Gaal, the man whose head and neck look like an extended thumb. So with me to talk a little bit about the Manchester United team that we're going to face, who have been struggling but picking up a lot of points, I'm joined by a Manchester United fan, some of you may know from Twitter. You could call him Noz or at Bearded Genius. Welcome to the show.
All right, Andy, how's it going?
It's going all right. Big game coming up on Monday. Monday's a shit day for an FA Cup game, though, really, isn't it?
Well, it's especially shit for your lot, seeing as you've got to come up here. And I'm sure there's a few really funny Arsenal fans that'll say it's shit for all our fans to come up to Manchester. But yeah.
I doubt anyone would be that derivative.
No, it's a bit crap. I can't remember the last time United weren't on telly for the FA Cup. It's Fridays and Mondays at the moment, which is a little bit annoying. But yeah.
You were at Cambridge last time around. Well, look, tell us a little bit about Manchester United's season, because from the outside looking in, if you're just looking at where United are in the table after everything that happened last season with David Moyes not going as well as people had hoped it would go, under Louis van Gaal, things seem a little bit better, but it's far from convincing in terms of the football that you're playing. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone, whether you're a United fan or not, it's all a bit bemusing why we're still up there, to be honest, because the football's not been great. And I mean, all United fans, we were quite realistic at the beginning of the season. I know a lot is made of the money that was spent, and it was a lot of money and a lot of big names came in, but we knew it would take time, and our goals were quite realistic for this season. It was to finish in top four and at least see some sort of progress. The thing that's slightly disconcerting about how things have gone is there doesn't seem to be any sort of gradual improvement,
right,
or sort of direction to the team. But yes, it just seems to be a case of we're just grinding out results somehow, not playing well, seeming to be quite lucky, but then it gets to a point that you kind of think it's sort of continued all season, and we've continued to get these lucky wins and just about get past these teams. And with 10 games to go, you kind of wonder whether there's some sort of logic that we can't see.
That this is exactly, it's not by accident. It's designed. This is the way that van Gaal set his team out.
I can kind of see what he's trying to do. I don't think this is how he'd like to play. I think he likes the possession. He likes possession football, but he'd like it to be more fluent and faster. But he's kind of trying to do just enough to get into the top four. But his method of doing it is to be quite conservative. The concern I've got with that is I don't think conservative tends to work in this country. I think both Liverpool last season and this season and Arsenal have shown that if you're not great at the back, but you've got attacking players and you do attack in games, that tends to be the best way to go about it. And if you focus on having a quite a defensive team and go for the 1-0s and 2-1s, it can backfire. So. Yeah. It's still a bit of concern, and especially I know we're meant to be talking about the FA Cup, but in terms of league, as a United fan, I think we should be most concerned out of Liverpool, Arsenal, and United, simply because the other two teams have got that momentum or a level of momentum, and United really haven't.
It's funny because you look at the United squad and you think where are you strong, and it's in attack. In terms of the amount of players that you've got there and the quality of some of the players that you've got there. And at the back, you look at certain players and you wonder if they're good enough or if they're ready, you know, because there's some young guys that have been brought into the side. So it seems an odd decision to play conservatively when your strengths lie further forward.
Absolutely. But I think a lot of people get frustrated and sort of complain about the number of attackers we've got, and yet we're quite impotent up front, and and then talk about the sort of lack of quality defenders, and yet sort of statistically we're doing quite well at the back. But I mean, that fails to sort of appreciate the fact that the whole team has to play a certain way in order to protect the porous back four or five, and sure. It just means that the whole team's having to play in quite a stilted, possession-focused way instead of being dynamic and basically pulling. The thing United don't do this season, which is evident in every single game, is we don't pull defenders out of positions. So if a team is organised against us, they've got quite a good chance to do well against us, because there's no pace, there's no real imagination in terms of the passing. It's very slow and ponderous.
Well, you've just broken the heart of every Arsenal fan listening to this.
What about being organised?
Because if there's a way of finding ourselves all over the place, we'll do it.
Well, again, the funny thing about Arsenal v United is the worse United are playing, and the sort of the weaker we look on paper, we tend to do better against you. For some strange reason, I don't know if it's because when we are a weaker team, we've always tended to have less talented but more combative players that have just ruffled your feathers a little bit. It's so strange. You look at some of the team sheets that have come up against Arsenal and beaten them, and on paper they're really, really weak. So who knows? But I mean, I'm not especially confident going into the game on Monday.
I was gonna ask you. I mean, based on what you've seen from Arsenal this season, I think we're in a much better vein of form. We keep having these little runs of good form for the last couple of months, and then there's a defeat in there that just saps the life out of everything. So, we do well, and then we lose to Southampton. We do well again, we lose to Tottenham. We do well again, we lose to Monaco. And I think this is a game that a lot of Arsenal fans have a bit of trepidation about because of the record that we have against you lot over the last couple of years. It really hasn't been good. I think the last time we won was when Aaron Ramsey scored a goal at our place, and that was a good number of years ago. But are United fans actually concerned about this Arsenal team?
Yeah, I think there's every reason to be concerned about it, just because you've got quality players. But I think, like you say, the only sort of positive on that is that Arsenal always have a defeat in them. It's almost like the better they're playing, the more likely sort of a surprise loss is. It's one of those sort of stereotypical things of Arsenal could be their own worst enemy. But if you look at both teams and how we set up and how we play, I'd suggest, especially on form, Arsenal are probably favourites. And I'd say no pleasure in that, because when I tend to be, although I'm probably a bit of a natural pessimist about United, I do tend to be quite bullish for these big games, just because United tend to do well in big games. But it's just at the moment for instance, in the last game, Van Gaal described it as our best performance of the season against Newcastle. And sometimes I'm not sure what he actually thinks and what is him communicating himself in not the best way, because he can't have thought that was the best performance of the season. I think what he was suggesting was in terms of possession and in terms of dominating the play to the extent that we had the ball and we had that level of control, but in terms of any sort of penetration and doing much with the ball, there wasn't much of that at all.
Is there pressure on him to win something this season? Because I think for Arsene Wenger, the game on Monday takes big significance, because the top four finish is now an expectation. And certainly after last season, and certainly with the money that Arsenal spent in the summer, there's an expectation that Arsenal, at the very least, would finish top four. But obviously, having won the FA Cup last season, broken that trophy duck, it's there again, that this almost feels like a season ender for Arsenal in terms of what people would perceive as genuine success. Is that the same for Van Gaal, or is the top four the be all and end all?
I think it's different for Van Gaal. It's important to the extent that because we're not doing great, this will add a loss would add more pressure onto him, and the naysayers would come out, and there'd be more people sort of questioning him. But but that's more in terms of the context of how we're doing in terms of form. In terms of winning the FA Cup, there's not that pressure on him. He's quite lucky in that respect. It's more a case of most United fans. The aim is to get into that top four and then take it from there. Because, and I don't mean this disrespectfully about Arsenal, but you get a sense within the club. There's almost been a sense of top four has sometimes been enough, and that's sort of permeated through the players. Where I don't think the fans have felt like that, but that's a sense. I've got from outside. Now, at United, it's not a case of, oh, we're just happy with top four and that'll be fine. We're kind of looking at it in terms of the bigger picture, and getting top four would allow us into the Champions League, obviously, but it would allow us to go for the calibre of player that we want to go for to be back to where we are.
Well, I mean, like spending 60 million on Di Maria.
it's a straight.
It hasn't stopped you, really.
Well, it's not. But then there's other factors involved, isn't there?
Sure.
One of the things you look at the sort of big names we've sort of bought over the summer, and the feeling again amongst a lot of United fans is a big part of that is getting into bed with Jorge Mendes or however you pronounce his name. He sort of has got quite chummy with Edward Woodward, and
equalizer.
And basically what he's done is there's been a bit of to and fro's, and everything's become a kind of interlinked web of sort of transfer negotiations. So you've got Di Maria who was brought in, you've got Falcao who's been brought in on loan, and the sort of strong sort of suggestion from Mendes has been almost as if the Falcao sort of negotiations could impact on the De Gea negotiations, who's also a Mendes client. So it's all a Mendes sort of designed web, and I don't think Van Gaal is fully into that,
yeah.
And I don't think he appreciates that. So that might be part of the reason why we've managed to get these big names in, but realistically, I think if we're going to sort of push on, and we're going to get all the players that we want, top four really is a priority. Otherwise, it just next season just becomes exactly the same as this season. Yeah. And there's no progress, and it's a season wasted. So that's never sat well amongst United fans.
Okay, well, look, you know, you can give this one a swerve on Monday, I think. You know, you don't need to take it too seriously. So you guys concentrate on top four, and we'll see what happens. Listen, thanks a million for your time. And, well, obviously you made the best man win, and that's clearly me, but I do appreciate you coming on.
See you later.
Thanks very much indeed to Noz. You can follow him on Twitter @BeardedGenius. And despite his terrible taste in football teams, he is a very good follow indeed on Twitter, and I heartily recommend it. Now, we're going to take a break. No, we're not actually going to take a break. I was mixing up my Arsecasts. That's the Arsecast Extra. We don't do breaks on this, well, not very often, and we're certainly not doing one now. We're just going to continue the discussion, but from a more Arsenal-centric point of view. A couple of guests to join me now. First up, it's James from WeAreTheNorthBank.com. Hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
And Andrew Allen. Hello.
Hi there.
Andrew, let me start with you. Since the Monaco game, Arsenal have played 2-1-2. Not hugely convincing in either game, really. Probably better spells against Queen's Park Rangers than against Everton. But, I mean, is that to be expected for a team that keeps tripping itself up in a spell of reasonably good form overall. I think Arsenal have won 12 of their last 16 games, but these little defeats in the middle of all those seem to cause us problems.
Yeah, I think Arsene described the win over Everton as a kind of back-to-basics victory, and I think sometimes that's exactly what we need to do after a defeat. It's, you know, you always look at Arsenal and wonder whether confidence is a little fragile at times, and it's actually very, very good to see us winning two games on the bounce out of what was a pretty traumatic evening against Monaco. I think, as you said, I mean, the QPR performance was certainly, in the second half, a much better representation of the type of football we play. Everton, I mean, we were kind of stymied by the fact that Everton weren't particularly adventurous themselves, and it was two very nervous-looking teams trying to, you know, sort of spar without wanting to hurt each other.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
But I thought particularly in the second half against QPR, there were real positive signs, but it was also very typical of us to sort of, as we did against Crystal Palace a couple of weeks ago, kind of concede and then make things much more difficult going into the final minutes. But, you know, you can't complain. Two wins out of two off the back of a bad night, and obviously Giroud scoring twice. So,
James, I mean, is that what we should be focusing on completely, the results, or is there room to look at the performances and how those results are coming about?
I think at this stage of the season, it's just all about getting the results, no matter what the performance is like. Obviously, as fans and paying punters, we'd want to watch the brand of football that we're used to. It was pretty dire against Everton. But as Andrew said, it was 6 points out of six after that horrific night against Monaco. You can't really argue at this stage of the season where games come coming thick and fast. And to be honest, the teams in and amongst us are on great runs of form themselves. So no complaints from me.
Right. Well, I mean, sticking with you, I mean, that's a big point, because midweek the pressure was on because... pressure was on anyway, but look, when United win, when Liverpool win, when Man City win, when, you know, Southampton win, and I know there's one, oh yeah, for Tottenham, I'm forgetting Tottenham, but imagine, but when they win, it really is a very, very tight race for the top four. And it was funny today, I saw somebody talking about the final 10 league games of the season, and I thought, fucking hell, it's whizzed by, but we're really coming into the business end of things now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I sent a tweet a couple of weeks ago. Had a spare moment during the day and just chucked the fixtures down into a really crap spreadsheet caption, probably the worst thing you've seen on the internet all year. But it had all of the fixtures, and at the time I tweeted that I have no doubts about finishing fourth because, you know, at the time we were the only team in the hunt with seven home games, and that now has dropped to five home games. Southampton and Spurs have only got and Liverpool have only got four home games left. So to me, that's a huge advantage at this stage of proceedings. That said, two of our home games are against Liverpool and Chelsea, so yeah, absolutely huge games, all to play for. Despite not kind of playing free-flowing football, which is immensely frustrating, we're still picking up the points in the league, so can't really argue.
All right, Andrew, Mesut Ozil is a player that still continues to divide opinion among Arsenal fans. And, you know, we see the comments on Arsblog News pretty much every time there's anything to do with him. Regardless of what is produced to back up or to counter claims that he's lazy or he doesn't care, you know, he's run further than, I don't know, everybody in the world since he's come back from injury. You know, he covers the most ground. Apparently, this means nothing at all. Is he always going to be one of those players? I mean, I love watching him. I get frustrated from time to time because I do feel he could be a bit stronger and a bit more influential. But when he does some of the stuff that he does, and there were a couple of examples against Southampton, he's just absolutely fabulous to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think you picked up in today's blog. I mean, there was a moment last night when he just kind of controlled the ball, drifted past the player like he wasn't there, and made a fantastic pass. But I think, without wanting to be rude to the general football fan, you have to be a bit of a connoisseur of that type of kind of, you know, decision making on the pitch to kind of weigh that against a Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi, who's banging in goals. I don't think there are many players who have, you know, had £42.5 million spent on them, and a lot of that money is being spent on a player who is there to make other players look very good. And I think that's kind of what Ozil does. He's a very, I mean, look, we've talked about it before. He's a quiet influence. He's not a guy who's necessarily going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. He's not going to charge around, take on five players. He probably won't score you the winner in consecutive games or anything like that. But when you watch him regularly and you appreciate just some of the smaller things he does, you recognise the quality that he brings to the team. Now, don't get me wrong, I would love every player on Arsenal's team to hear about, like, Alexis Sanchez, you know. But the fact is, Alexis Sanchez is a £32 million player himself, and he does what he does in a very unique way. There aren't actually many players in world football who do what he does, and I think it's very odd for... You've got a kind of chalk-and-cheese attitude towards football, and it's a very personal way that they tackle the games. But in each case, there is qualities that they bring, and you know, sometimes they're going to hit it off, sometimes they aren't going to hit it off. One of them's going to look great, the other one's not going to look so great in comparison. But, you know, would I rather have Mesut Ozil in my team than not? Obviously. I mean, I think he's fantastic.
James, your thoughts on that? I mean, is it a case that people are looking at what Alexis does? And I think, on a very basic level, people really enjoy watching a guy who is full-blooded, wholehearted, works for the team, tries to make up for the mistakes that he makes, is always trying to make something happen. But if you had every single player in your team playing that way, I think they call that under-10s football, right?
Yeah, headless chickens football. I love Ozil. I think he's a great player. And if you were to canvas anyone who's ever played with him, he's that sort of footballer that not a bad word will be spoken about him, because he's the sort of player that makes others perform, you know, especially on the higher stage. And I think he's coming for a hell of a lot of unfair criticism. That said, he is infuriating at times. I think what gets to me is the mannerisms and the way that he kind of reacts if something doesn't go for him. Like, if he gets shoved off the ball and doesn't get the free kick, he kind of throws his arms up in the air and mopes, whereas you kind of, I would prefer him to just concentrate on trying to win the ball back. That's the only real criticism I have, except for maybe adding more goals to his game. But if you just look at the assists that that he's made, he's recorded for Arsenal in a short space of time already. It's been phenomenal, especially given a completely different league, coming straight in, you know, a busier summer than anyone else, I'd say, in the World Cup. No rest, coming in, getting injured, coming straight back into the team, and not really being given much of a rest by Wenger, just being played constantly since coming back from the knee injury. And I just think the criticism is, most of it stirred up by the media, is literally just because it's easy. I mean, he's an easy target, isn't he, with the price tag? But I totally agree with Andrew. He's one for the purists. But if you just watch him throughout a game, you'll see a lot more to his game than perhaps what you'd see if you just track the ball.
He, yeah, I think he's still going to got some way to go to convince some people, but, you know, I think maybe the price tag is an issue for people, but, you know, I think, you know, when we spent that money on him, I don't remember anybody being too unhappy about that money being spent, and I don't think that the return we've got is necessarily bad value for that money either in the current market. Anyway, look, I'll stick with you, James, because somebody who hasn't played a great deal recently is Theo Walcott. It's been noticeable that he hasn't been played, didn't get on against Everton, hasn't been picked for away games. Do you feel like there's something going on there with Theo Walcott that perhaps we don't know about?
No, I don't think so. I literally just think it's because of the length of the layoff and the need to take baby steps with him. Also, I think the nature of the last two games in particular have been that we haven't really been in a position to bring him off the bench. So I don't read anything into it. I think he probably will start on Monday night. That said, it's always a bit of a gamble with Theo away from home in the big games because he just doesn't offer you as much protection off the ball as, for example, a Welbeck. But I'd be surprised if he doesn't start against United.
Andrew, your thoughts on Theo at the moment?
Well, I mean, where is he really? I mean, I guess that's my initial thought because we obviously don't depend on him in the same way that we have done in the past. I mean, if you put this before his injury, Theo would have been first name on the team sheet kind of material. And our squad has developed as a whole to the point where we've got someone like Danny Welbeck who, if we need someone on the right, or even Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, a couple of guys there who can provide pace, width, but probably a bit more in the way of tracking back. And when it comes to options in the centre of the park, I mean, I'd say you're probably looking at a hierarchy of obviously Giroud first, Alexis, and then maybe Theo after that. The fact is, since Theo came back from injury, a couple of goals aside, I don't personally, having grown infuriated with him in a couple of games, feel that he is... I think he's taking the fact that he's come back from injury as a kind of... he's treating every game like a stepping stone, and I don't think in Premier League football you can really afford to sort of take your time and feel your way back into things. And I think Arsenal has kind of looked at him and think like, you know, come on, mate, where's the performance? And I just don't think he's doing enough in games. And I don't know whether I'm reading too much into this, but I mean, I look back at what Wenger did to Theo when contract negotiations opened last time, and Arsenal brazenly left him on the bench, and Theo made a point of coming off the bench and scoring goals and got the contract he wanted. He was in a much stronger position at the time. I think Arsene, whether he's doing it deliberately or not, is certainly in a position where he can afford to leave Walcott on the bench at the moment. And I think unless there are any injuries in that, you know, to the guys who are currently up front at the moment, I don't actually expect Theo to necessarily start games.
It's an interesting situation. Just as we're talking, something is broken, so I want to run this by you. Papis Cisse has been given a 7-game ban for spitting during the game against Manchester United. Johnny Evans was surprised to wake up, apparently, after such a terrible incident. How do we get our head around this kind of arbitrary ridiculousness when it comes to banning players? Why are they so keen to cut out things like spitting or put things like spitting on a much higher scale than actual violence or tackles which result in serious injury to a player? James?
I always remember an incident with Essien playing for Chelsea years ago, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, where he nearly broke a player's leg, and there was a lot of hoo-ha made about it in the Premier League. To me, that's the first kind of high-profile incident I can remember the Premier League commenting on and saying they don't do retrospective video review to take action against players. And I know that's been a Premier League rule for a long time. But to me, it's just ridiculous. We know that the pace of the game has never been quicker. We know it's never been so difficult to referee games. We have the technology there. There's, 25 plus cameras in every single ground at every game. Mm. Why we don't use it, especially for leg-breaking tackles, coward tackles that we've seen so many times, and that you see quite often. Why they don't use it for that is just beyond me. To be honest, I think spitting is disgusting in the game. Again, it's just a cowardly act. It's obviously for young kids watching this, it's really not a good thing to kind of see the players they look up to doing that and behaving in that way. But I totally agree with you in the sense that why they don't take the same sort of process for particularly career-threatening tackles is beyond me. Mm. It baffles me.
I mean, it's the spitting is it's not nice, of course, but the lasting damage of it is, well, there isn't any.
Yeah,
unless you pick up a bit of a cold or something like that. You can wipe it off, but try wipe off a broken leg. And, of course, John Terry, who allegedly referred to Anton Ferdinand as a fucking black cunt, got 4 games. So, Andrew, it just raises more questions about the processes in the FA and the things that they're prepared to deal with in a real way.
I mean, to be honest, as bad as spitting is, and it's a horrible thing to do to another human being, I'm flabbergasted, I think is the only word I can use to see that someone has been given a 7-game ban for what actually, in Cisse's case, a man who's admitted wrong, and it was an act of retribution having been spat on by a guy who is denying the fact that he spat on someone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mad. I mean, I can only assume that Johnny Evans is going to get as long a ban, if not worse, because the fact is the guy started it and he also denied it.
Yeah.
And it's on camera. So as far as I'm concerned, they should be throwing the book at it. But if they do, offering more than 7 games, you then start to put things in context. Suarez got an 8-match ban for racism against Evra, and then a 10-match ban for biting. Now, obviously, those are two things completely outside of the whole leg-breaking tackle argument. But I can't for one moment. I mean, obviously, it's a nasty thing to do, but it's bizarre. Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. He's got an extra game, hasn't he? Because he got a ban before the elbow, I think, on Shane Long.
Right. Well, I mean,
so it would have been just six
games. Just the 6 games. I mean, it's all rather arbitrary at the end of the day, isn't it? I mean, punishing someone for spitting, you can give them a 10-game ban, 20-game, whatever. But it just seems strange that the biggest problem in the game is violent challenges, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you only have to look at Hutton's challenge the other day in the Villa game. And, that guy got a booking. And because the referee's seen it, am I right in thinking that he won't get anything more?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
But that's absolute madness. Absolutely mad. I'm almost lost for words.
Mm. It's just, but when you put it in the context of everything else, if you were to say to somebody, 6-game ban for spitting, but when you put it against some of the other bans that have gone out, like if spitting is 6 games, then racism should be 20 games or 25 games or a season. It just doesn't make any sense on any level.
No.
All right. Okay, very quickly, James, Monday night against Manchester United, we haven't won against them since 2011. That was at home when Aaron Ramsey scored. And if I'm right, I think the last time we beat them at Old Trafford was it Adebayor who scored the goal?
God, that's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago.
That was 2006. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. What are your thoughts ahead of this game? How much of our season rests on what happens on Monday night?
I think it all does now. I mean, we're writing off Monaco, aren't we? So I think, it's huge. And we are so due getting one over on them. The game earlier in the season was just about one of the most frustrating experiences I've had in a football ground. I mean, we outplayed them for the majority of the game, and well, it was just typical Arsenal, wasn't it? I'm quietly confident that we'll get a draw and bring them back, and beat them in a replay, hopefully. But you know, this is Arsenal. Anything can happen. It just seems against, especially against United in the last sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons, they've really got our number. They're not playing very well, but Van Gaal has somehow, call it luck or whatever, he's got a knack for winning games. I'm just hoping that we really up our game, because I don't think, although the second half last night was, we looked a lot more like ourselves, the last two games, if we turn in a performance like that against them at Old Trafford, even on the kind of form they're in, they've got enough big game players to destroy us, I think. But I'm confident that won't happen.
Andrew, is it, are we weighed down by the weight of recent form against Manchester United, or is it time for us to put that in the past?
I definitely think that there's something of a mental block, and it seems strange to even suggest it, given that, you know, the team has changed immeasurably since, well, let's say 2006, since we last won there. But I mean, it just, the team has changed a lot recently in the last 4 or 5 years, and the same problems seem to occur. And, you know, I think in a weird wave of optimism, prior to the Monaco game, I looked at that United fixture and I thought, we can go there, we can turn them over. But the Monaco game kind of reminded me that at any given moment, we can kind of completely self-destruct. And I think if there's something that I think is incredibly important in that game, is that we don't concede first. I think if we could get a goal, I think a draw is a perfectly acceptable result, and get them back to the Emirates. They'll be missing a couple of guys. I guess Van Persie's going to be out, and presumably Johnny Evans will now not be playing against us if he's, you know, gobbed all over, you know, Cisse. So I really wish I could, I wish I could be optimistic about it, but it's Manchester United, it's Old Trafford. I think in the 30-odd years I've been supporting Arsenal, we've only won a handful of times. We've only scored 2 goals in one game in the Premier League there since the Premier League's been in existence. And then there was the 2-0 in the FA Cup in 2003. But really, we just never deliver up there. It's so frustrating, because there have been games we put in good performances and not got anything out. There have been games when we've been done over by referees, like the one that ended our unbeaten run. And there have been games that we've just sat like rabbits in the headlight, like that ridiculous 8-2 and the 6-1 and the 4-0 in the FA Cup a few years ago. So who knows? I'd love to think that this team has got it in them to go up there and get a result, and maybe they will, but I think a draw would be good for me.
So, yeah, well, basically what you're saying, the law of averages is on our side.
Yes, I'm an eternal optimist, and definitely.
All right, okay, well, look, we'll keep fingers crossed for that. I think we could do without a replay, to be perfectly honest, particularly as we've got United at home, don't we, in the... Oh, have we got to go to Old Trafford, or do we go? Do we have them at home in the league?
We're heading up to them because they've already dicked on us at home.
Oh, fuck! I forgot about that. Anyway, okay. Well, look. Yeah, I could do without a replay, so we'll just do them on Monday. That would be good. Andrew, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And James from WeAreTheNorthBank.com, thank you.
It's a pleasure. Cheers.
You can give both those gentlemen a follow on Twitter. Andrew Allen is at A Allen Sport, at A Allen Sport. And James, you can find at We Are the North Bank, at We Are the North Bank, and at WeAreTheNorthBank.com. So follow and read and do all those things. Right, well, FA Cup action on Monday. We've discussed it for the most part with the chaps there. I don't know what to expect. Anything could happen. Anything probably will. Whether it's good anything or bad anything, your guess is as good as mine. We've got 2 games now against Manchester United at Old Trafford, having won one of those games in the last whatever amount of years, since 2006, the Adi Bayor goal. That's 9 years. It's a big task for us to go and win there twice. Now, we don't have to win twice, but obviously, if we want to get through to the next round of the FA Cup, we've got to beat United either in the game on Monday or in a replay. And then, of course, in the league game, and because everything's so tight, I mean, the very least that we need to get from that game at Old Trafford is a draw. So, you know, we're going to have to pull it out of the bag a bit here at Old Trafford over the next few weeks. Fingers crossed we can do that. We don't have any team news as yet for the game on Monday, but obviously we've got the whole weekend to sit and stew and worry about that game because it's on a stupid Monday night, which is a stupid time to have an FA Cup game. I know we've kind of got used to league football on a Monday night, but even then, I don't like Monday night games of football. You know, it's the start of the week, not the end of the weekend, and that's how it feels. It kind of messes with my body clock. But look, let's keep fingers crossed then. We will have an Arsecast extra for you on Tuesday. It won't be on Monday because we want to do one in which we react to whatever happens at Old Trafford on Monday night. Hopefully it's good stuff. Good, good, really good, happy, happy stuff. Let's keep our fingers crossed for that, shall we? So until then, have yourselves a great football-free weekend. Let's hope everyone that we need to lose loses over the course of the next couple of days. And we'll talk on Tuesday when hopefully we're into the next round of what's the next round? Is it the quarter? What is it? Is this the quarterfinal? Yes. Shit. Really is important now. Until the next time, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Arsenal Football Club today announced that action would be taken against the fan whose shouting was picked up on the Pathé newsreel last weekend. He could be heard shouting, "Match official, you're a confounded rascal. I question the legitimacy of your child and your anus," Chairman Sir Chips Keswick said.
"That cunt needs to shut his fucking mouth or I'll smash his bollocks in."
The referee is being cared for by nuns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.